Accession number 13359, Mr. George Richardson, reel 2.
Mr. G. S. Richardson, reel 2. You dispense with your civilian clothes, Mr. Richardson. What happened to them?
We packed them into the sealed cases that we'd been told to take and told to put them to one side. And some of us would be going home the following weekend and we would take our clothes with us and finish with civilians. From then on, we would only wear a uniform.
The billet that you were in, you say there was about 30 people of you in there, lying on the floor on a palliasse. How was it kept clean?
Well, none of us that were in training had to do that. There were two blokes who found out that had been on a previous 8 weeks course and they hadn't fulfilled them for one reason or another. That either fallen sick or done something that wasn't good enough, and those two men were room orderlies. They were basically singing to us because they'd been in the army a few weeks more than us, and talked as though they were NCOs, but we knew that they were just billet orderlies, and they kept the place clean. Our shaving facilities were downstairs, and it was only cold water, no hot water. There was no heating system at all in that hall. It wasn't used by anybody else but our platoon. And we had to get downstairs, shave in cold water, wash down in just our trousers, go back up and get dressed, and outside on parade for 7 o'clock to do a little physical jerks in pigtail kit up and down the square outside for about a quarter of an hour, 20 minutes.
Must have been particularly cold. That was a very cold winter.
It was a very cold winter, and the snow was actually blowing through onto the top of my greatcoat when I woke up in the morning. But we were running up and down, and we thought that this Lance Corporal that was in charge of us, that was telling us what to do, we thought he was a general or something like that. He was, he shouted and we jumped.
Do you remember his name?
No.
Mr. Bean, you'd come from home in a pretty well a warm and comfortable situation into this situation. What were your feelings at this time?
Well, a little bit resentment that they were treating us in that way, and but at the same time, I had roughed it. I had camped in cold conditions. I've seen me with camping at Easter, getting up in the morning out of our little bivouac tent, breaking the water on top of the billy can and cooking our breakfast. So I had more or less toughened myself up. I used to cycle 20, 30 miles with a rucksack on my back to go camping with the scouts. So I was fairly tough. And working down the main, although I'm not very tall, I'm only 5'6" and a half, I'm fairly sturdy. And so I just took it as though that is your lot. You're sealed with this and you've got to make the best of it.
But what other lads in the unit, did they take it that way?
Well, I think most of them knew that if they didn't, there was something very bad going to happen to them. Personally, I think that the man that we'd seen scrubbing the steps was there just to show what could happen. I'm sure he might have even been there enjoying himself just doing that. But we didn't know any other. And after our little session of PT, we tried our uniforms on. Not our uniform, but our KD. Oh, they call it the uniform that we wore for rough work. I can't even remember the name, you know. We had the battle dress plus the... So our second uniform was a very strong uniform, which could stand the weather. It was more or less the same as the battle dress, but not as neat and tidy as a battle dress. It had large pockets, similar to a battle dress, but was made of much stronger material, something like what jeans are. We were marched up to for our breakfast, and then after breakfast...
Do you recall what you got for breakfast in those days?
I think they gave us some porridge, hot porridge, a little milk, a little sugar to put over the porridge. I think we had a slice of dry bread, and I do think we had a... we got eggs regularly, fried eggs. Fried probably about 50 in one large pan and just cut up into portions and put onto the plate. That was more or less the most of the army catering anyhow. Anyway, after breakfast, we marched back down to our billet, and the Landskorbel took us into the... at the end of our sleeping quarters, there was an ante room, and there was drawing boards, blackboards, and one or two plans of things. And he brought in, told us all to stand up, and the corporal came in. I should know his name, but I can't. He was a good, strong bloke. He was a regular army first battalion man, and. He knew his job. He first of all told us what was expected. He went through some military law, showed us rankings, Landskorbel, corporal, sergeant, sergeant majors, colour sergeants, and for 2 or 3 weeks we never saw anyone senior than him.
In these situations where you went into this room and did this kind of education part of it, recognising ranks and so forth, were you introduced to the regimental history?
Yes, that was, I think that came towards the end of our 8 weeks, because we were issued with our hat badges right from the start, and we were told that... the Durham Light Infantry was a proud regiment that had done well service in the First World War, and we had battalions, the two regular battalions, 1st Battalion, 2nd Battalion, had done lots of 20-odd year service in India, and that it was a proud regiment to be in, and it was our counter regiment, and we should be proud of it. And we more or less took that for granted, that we were Light Infantry. And we trained. He showed us how to oil our rifle bolts and aim. I remember the aiming practice I thought was a little bit naughty at first. We had to get down on the floor in a lying load position. Another man would stand with a bayonet about a yard away, and we had to look through our sights at the hole in the top of the bayonet and press the trigger. And I thought, well, yes. And the man that was looked through the hole, and he could tell the corporal whether we were aiming correctly or not. When he looked back, it was a good thing, but I would like to try it out with some of the blokes, especially when we received the 200 rounds of live ammunition. Because he was looking through that hole in the top of the bend, you know what I mean? That was our aiming practice. And then we had the aiming practice at things a little bit further apart. After about 2 weeks, we learned to march fairly good. And our marching had been taken up and getting faster and faster and faster And round about after 2 weeks of marching up and down this on icy roads, it was a bloke that I found out was a sergeant major in charge of our training. And he came down and stood and watched this Corporal Martins up and down, and he told the corporal to halt us and spoke to the corporal, and we could all hear, and he said that he timed us and we marched at 153 steps a minute. And our steps were 140. And so he stood there, and the corporal got us on the move, and we found out 140 is fairly easy. We'd been marching about 150 for about a week, and we found 140 was fairly easy after that. Whether he did it on purpose or not, I don't know. But I remember the first time, after 2 or 3 days, we marched up to the dining hall, and the corporal brought us to a halt, and half of us fell down. We just skidded. After 2 days, our boots had been, our spare boots had been sent to the cobblers, and they were filled up with studs. And those studs were so bright. And we had to have the correct number of studs in each boot. They were inspected regularly. We had one done while marching and the other one without studs. As soon as that one was studded up, they went in the kit bag and marched on the other pair. And we had to keep changing our boots so that they both kept ready. Two pairs of boots. Good, strong leather boots.
Were your feet examined after a great deal of drilling and marching?
No, no. I never had another examination by anyone until I went to further training. And then it was Saturday morning, FFI inspection. Free from infection. Drop your pants, waggle it about, have a look, bend down, okay, pass on. And at the end of the first week, I was given a leave pass from after duty Saturday until 23:59 hours Sunday night. So it was Saturday morning, and we had to make our own way home. Carried the case onto the bus to... I got the train from Bishop Auckland. It was fairly cheap. Train from Brunsworth down to... No, sorry, we're at Willington. We had to get the train from Willington down to Durham, and then it was cheaper to go by a bus from there to where I lived.
What was your pay?
My first pay was 7 shilling.
And was this paid weekly?
That was 7 shilling for me and 7 shilling for my mother. And that was paid on a Friday morning. We marched up to the cookhouse, the dining room, and we were taught to stand in squads. And the officer, the paying officer, sat behind the desk. The company, the colour sergeant, sat next to him. And I think it must have been the sergeant orderly that had the books. He was reading out our names. The colour sergeant would call out name alphabetically, and of course Richardson, I was well back in the queue, and he shouted Richardson GS for the first 2 Fridays, and I marched up and got it. The third Friday I was called out, and we were told that they would call us out by our last 2 numbers, and I'd been given 4459241. So he shouted Richardson 41, and I sprung to attention, marched forward. At the same time, another bloke who I'd never seen before marched up to the desk, and we both saluted. The officer stood and looked at the sergeant major. The sergeant, colour sergeant, said to me, "What's your number?" I said, 4459241, sir. "What's your number?" 4459241, sir. "Oh, no. No, no, impossible. Only one number, one man in this army." So they looked through the books, and had been a mistake. We were given 445-9241. So I had to report to the company office, and they found out that my number wasn't that. Well, it was 445-8727. And the other one was Harry Richardson. And he'd been going up, because he was H and I was J, we'd been going up after each other. And we didn't even know, because they'd been calling out. I think there must have been about three Richardsons in that lot, but he was the only one. Anyway, that happened, and Harry Richardson went up at the same time as me. I didn't see Harry Richardson again until we came together to learn to be signallers at the training centre down at Brownie Corrie.
How did your parents receive you first time home in your uniform?
Well, we had to take our clothes home, so their my mother said, "Well, what are you doing now?" I said, "Well, I haven't got to wear them anymore. I can just put them away." What happened to my? Can't remember. I know the next time that I came home from leave after about 10 months, they didn't fit me. I filled out, muscle-wise, and everything, from where I'd been down the pit. It was fairly robust. Anyway, I never wore them again. I don't know what happened to them. Probably my good feeling.
You were doing, well, you mentioned your rifle training. What kind of drills were you learning in those very early days?
Yeah, well, we do marching. Marching as a squad, up and down, halting, turning in line, standing at ease. We had to learn rifle drill, and because we're infantry, we had to learn to do our rifle movements right from standing at ease right through to the final order, which we took quite easy, but we found out that other regiments did things entirely different. We had to carry our rifles at the carry, which is in the right hand and lengthways parallel to the floor. Nozzle facing the front. We had to port arms, shoulder arms. We had to learn to order arms, give a butt salute for a salute to a subordinate officer. We had to learn to do a
present
arms for orderly officer or a major and above. And we learned some funeral drill. We learned a slow march, but not for the first few weeks. We didn't learn any ceremonial drill. It was just hard slog, marching about, marching down to Durham City for a bath, which was what, from Willington down to Durham, about 5, 6, 7 miles. March down to Durham City bath, have a shower, have a swim for half an hour, and march back. We used to, that was about the longest march we had after about 2 weeks. We'd never had a bath before we were in 2 weeks.
Did all this training take part in the morning?
Oh no, all day. All day until our evening meal. And when
what time was lunch?
I think half past 12, 1 o'clock. Probably 1 o'clock.
And what kind of food were you getting for lunch?
Well, that was our main meal. Our main meal was, and it was hash, bully beef mixed in with the potatoes, a slice of bread. Sometimes we had we didn't have plates, of course. We had our billy cans, which we, one side was for one thing, the other side was for another. Hold that out, two slices of bread pushed in with a piece of butter. The other one was sloshed in with a piece of potato, a piece of sausage, or a piece of mash, And we had our knives and forks in our top pocket, and we'd go back and sit down on a long form, long bench, and ate up. And then, and that was about, sometimes, I think, on a Sunday, they would give us a piece of cake for a special, I think even sometimes on a Saturday for a speciality. But I didn't, on the 8 weeks I was at Wilton, I only spent 2 weekends in Wilton. The other 6 weeks, I went home on weekend pass. The 2 weeks we were left there, we had one guard duty to do, and at night time, Saturday night, I went down to the local picture house in Wellington. On the Sunday afternoon, we were invited to the Salvation Army in Wellington, who gave us a smashing feed of cake and tea, free, and we had to stay and sing half a dozen hymns. But that was all right. I was fairly religious anyhow. Still am.
The people of Wellington, they would see you actually doing all this on their streets.
Oh, yes.
How did they receive you?
Well, when the sergeant or corporals used to be shouting at us, and especially when we stopped and or somebody slipped and dropped his rifle, and he would shout, "Leave it!" And then, you know, everybody would stand still, shivering, and then they would say, "Pick it up! Come here with it, and come here, and throw it to me." And then he'd throw it back as hard as he could and had to catch it, you know. Just showing you how to be tough. That's the way I looked at it. And of course, we didn't meet our sergeant, as I said, for the first few weeks. He'd been on leave, been a regular army man, and he was Sergeant Slater. He talked through his nose slightly. "I'm Sergeant Slater, and I'm your platoon sergeant, and I want my squad sergeant. I want my squad to be the best squad in this unit. And you do what you're told, and you and I will get all, you know, on together, all right. I didn't have any father, I didn't have any mother, but let me hear anybody say anything about that." Typical sergeant, regular army. Anyway, we learned. After about 3 weeks, we were brought up onto a street outside our big dining room, where all we met everybody that was at Wellington, all squads, and I think our number 5 squad. Can't be sure of that either. I used to have a leave pass, and it had my squad number on. Anyway, we're all in squads, and the sergeant stood at the rear of us. The corporal was a right marker, and each sergeant had to report to the sergeant major in a loud voice, present otherwise. And he would say, 28 man present, sir, or 27 present, one in detention, sir, or 26 present, one sick, one in detention, sir. Something like that, all the way down the line, until all the squad had reported. And of course, the sergeant major used to come around, walk along, and look at us all, and give us an inspection. We never saw any officers, except for when I went to the orderly room to have my number, and at the end of our training. We never saw any officers, just NCOs. We thought NCOs were gods. Especially
so you never, you wouldn't know who was in command?
No,
officers.
No idea.
The training you were doing, were you getting any opportunity for sport whilst this was going on?
We had an army PT physical training instructor come, and used to do us a little self-defense combat training, vaulting. We might get that 1 hour each week. There were so many of us there, the gymnasium wasn't all that large. The gymnasium was part of our dining room anyhow. And we didn't have time, really. We were working from 7 o'clock in the morning right through to, I would say, 7 o'clock at night. The rest of our time was on, and I didn't drink then. We were too tired after marching up and down and running up and down Bennett charging. And when we were Bennett practice, they took us up on the hills towards Towlaw, and the fields were full of snowmen that the kids around had made, and we used to have to charge them and bend them. There were big trestles with straw dummies on. We had to advance point charge, bayonet out and pass. And the sergeant had a long stick, maybe about 8 foot long, with a hard leather pouch on the end, and he used to tell us to bayonet him, and he would knock it out the road, and if he hit us, we were dead with that. and it felt like it sometimes too. It was to show us how to arm combat against an enemy for parry and all the rest of it.
Did you have any gas training?
Oh yes. Oh dear. We still only had our civilian gas masks. And towards the end, they took us, I think after 6 weeks, they took us down by service corps wagons to Whitburn Camp, Whitburn Firing Range, and we had to pass out firing. It might have been after 6 weeks. It was towards the end, because it was either you were proficient or you weren't proficient towards the end of your training. And we had to fire both Bren gun and rifle. We'd already done some small bore firing in a range in Willington with 30-yard ranges with small bore .22 rifles. And then we had to start firing from 200, 300, 400, back, I think the 600 was the maximum at full-size 8-foot target. And that came out pretty good. My eyesight was very good, and I came out pretty good.
You mentioned the Bren gun there.
Yes.
You introduced that very early on.
The Bren gun in the first week, we had to... the Lance Corporal would say, "Now watch this carefully." He would strip it down, and he would hand different parts to each one, and then he'd right Richardson come out and assemble this, and I would take each part off everybody else and try and put it together the way each one is do. And there's always something that was wrong, either the thing that controlled the gas was usually missing. It was still lying on the floor, and it should have been in one of the first parts. And gas training, we were taught how to take commands for firing, and also shown pictures of enemy aircraft. We were told how to, when NCO shouted gas, we had done our gas masks on, doesn't matter what we were doing. And during our firing for our end of training, the sergeant major shouted gas, and I happened to be firing the Bren gun. And the sergeant major says, "We call this, we plough the fields and scatter, gas." And I fired off a full lot and didn't hit the target about a little bit. The grass in front of it, the civilian gas mask just clouded up. No way could he fire and hit anybody at 200 yards with one of those on. It wasn't until we went to Meadowfield that we issued with the army gas mask.
Did you have to go into these huts or buildings with gas in them?
No.
At this stage?
No. No. At no time. At no time did I ever have to face gas. No time, no, not even when I joined the regular battalion. No. I did later when I was, after I came out of the war, I learned to be a rescue man down the mine, and I've been in gas. never mind. It's another story.
The men that you were obviously living with and getting to know in your billet in these first few weeks, was there any bullying that was taking place in the billet?
Not a lot. We thought we were being bullied enough by the NCOs. We were absolutely scared stiff of them. I know that. I wasn't, because I'd been brought to more or less a tender, I didn't used to do anything rough and tough as a youth. I'd been going out with the Boy Scouts camping, but the quality of lads that I knocked around with were nearly all grammar school lads, and we had a pretty good schooling too, but not really to be vagabonds. We didn't, you know, pretty well brought up. So bullying to me was just being bullied by the NCOs. I don't think anybody in our squad tried to bully anybody else or take anything else. We never lost any equipment by being stoned. Later on we did, when we were in the battalion, when there was a few different platoons got together and things went missing.